The following program is a co-production of New Jersey Network Radio and the New Jersey Historical Commission, Department of State. Funding for this program was provided in part by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, a state partner of the National Endowment for the Humanities, and the New Jersey Historical Commission. The views expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, the New Jersey Historical Commission, or NJN Radio.
Across the river from the skyscrapers of New York, in Jersey City, a political empire crashes. Winning candidate for mayor John V. Kenney ends the 36-year rule of Frank Haig, one of the last and most powerful of the old-time political bosses.
Corned beef.
Would you like mustard and cabbage on it? You got it.
What I know about Frank Haig is the Margaret Haig Hospital. He named it after his mother, and it was the biggest maternity hospital in the world. Frank Haig made sure that the ambulances for the medical center were all Cadillac ambulances. Definitely. Loved the man. He took care of the poor people. He robbed from the rich and took care of the poor. In my estimation, he was a great man.
Frank Haig. He was mayor of Jersey City, New Jersey, for 30 years, from 1917 to 1947. A working-class hero, a progressive reformer, a dictator American style. In high collar and spats, he was the ultimate Irish political boss. He could put a turkey on your Thanksgiving table, your brother-in-law on the police force, and your vote in FDR's column. He could also put his hand in your pocket. I am Malachy McCourt, and this is The Life and Times of Frank Haig.
He was very impressive. My first encounter with him was literally unforgettable.
Historian Thomas Fleming, whose father, Teddy Fleming, was a ward leader under Haig.
I was 7 years old the first time I met him. We were coming out of opening day at Roosevelt Stadium. And my father steered me around a big puddle and walked over to this, to me, he looked gigantic at seven, this man who was getting into a big Cadillac limousine. And he said, "Mayor, I'd like you to meet my son." And I put out my hand and Frank Haig mashed it as if he just caught me scalping box seat tickets. And he leaned down and glared into my face and said, "Your old man is a hell of a guy."
Frank Haig was born in 1876 in the Horseshoe District of Jersey City, which got its name from its odd shape. The Protestant establishment, bent on limiting the political power of the upstart Irish, gerrymandered them all into a single voting district.
It was a feisty, tough area.
Bob Leach runs the Jersey City Historical Project.
It was mixed with residential buildings and smokestack factories, railroads. You might live next to a railroad yard if you lived in a horseshoe. There was a saloon on every corner. There was a motto, I'm told, in the old horseshoe, "The horseshoe against the world." That was a motto coined by a ward boss, Denny McLaughlin. It was the attitude of the Irish. It was well known politically that we had been confined to that area. But the spirit was, it's us against them.
Frank Haig was the fourth of eight children. His father was a blacksmith for the Erie Railroad.
They were poor. His mother, Margaret, would deliver their babies. She would deliver on the kitchen table. Haig was born on the kitchen table down in the horseshoe. And it marked him for all his life.
In this tough immigrant neighborhood, young Frank Haig grew up and joined his first organization, a street gang.
Down in the horseshoe section of Jersey City, it was a rite of passage into manhood to rob freight yards. There was lots of what they call swag to be taken. The cars were full of them, raw materials coming in from the West, materials coming in from Europe. This was a great terminus. And Frank Haig's gang was called the Red Tiger Gang because most of the kids in the gang had red hair.
The red-headed Irish kid dropped out of grammar school. He had evaded an education, but also an indoctrination. According to historian Barbara Petrick, who teaches at Dickinson High School in Jersey City.
The whole establishment was a Protestant evangelical establishment. I mean, they were there to make good Americans out of immigrants. And I can see why the Irish didn't feel comfortable in the public schools. You know, they didn't stick around in schools too long. Like, you know, there wasn't much need for schooling in those days. A kid like Frank could get a job without having spent too much time in school.
Frank Haig got his education on the streets and was offered his first job in politics in a local saloon. Bob Leach tells the story.
In 1897, he's 21 years old, and there's a bartender in the neighborhood by the name of Ned Kenny. Ned Kenny had a rival, and I mentioned his name earlier, Denny McLaughlin. Denny McLaughlin and Ned Kenny were feuding over who was going to be the ward boss. So Ned Kenny wanted a cat's paw. He wanted something he could use, some legal way he could harass Denny McLaughlin. So he called in Frank Haig. Frank Haig was a very natty dresser as a young man, 21 years old. He had made some money as a prize fight manager. Ned Kenny said, "How would you like to run for constable?" And Haig said, "Well, if I'm going to run, I'll need about $75 to make friends." And Ned Kenny took a cigar box from under the bar and doled out $75. Haig went on and won.
The young Frank Haig cut quite a figure on the streets of Jersey City with his Homburg, high collar, and walking stick. This dapper, tough guy, who would poke people right in the chest when he spoke, was now part of the Democratic machine. Constable was a minor office, but Frank Haig was on his way up. He found a major ally, the Catholic Church.
He needed the support of the church, and he came around early to get it, Monsignor Shepherd of St. Michael's.
Again, Barbara Petrick.
He was vicar general of the archdiocese. He put just a few words in his parish bulletin about this young fellow who was running for public office. He thought he was a pretty straight guy, good fellow, you know, respected his mother, and didn't drink, didn't smoke, was polite, always took his hat off when he was talking to the Monsignor, and it paid off.
He was endorsed in that campaign because he promised to rid the neighborhood of gambling and prostitution.
So at the age of 21, Frank Haig had learned two secrets of political power in Jersey City. Win the support of the church by fighting sin, show loyalty to your ward leader by battling his enemies. By age 28, Haig had learned another lesson. Remain loyal to your old friends from the Horseshoe no matter what. They are your power base. A case in point, the infamous Red Dugan affair.
I was born and bred in Boston, a place you all know well. Brought up by honest parents, the truth to you I'll tell.
Red Dugan was a con man and a pickpocket who specialized in robbing Protestant clerics.
His most serious crime, and a long string of crimes, was he shot a minister's wife in the head.
According to Bob Leach, Dugan, one of the old Red Tiger gang, brought his anti-Protestant crime wave to Boston.
My character was broken.
He was arrested for stealing a minister's checkbook. Dugan's mother appealed for help from Frank Haig, who had risen to deputy sheriff in Hudson County. The rescue mission came at an opportune moment. In 1904, Haig himself was in trouble, accused of arresting black voters on their way to vote Republican. Haig went up to Boston and provided Dugan with a phony alibi. Back in Jersey City, Haig was fined $100 and fired from his job. He had angered the courts, but charmed his constituency. Again, Bob Leach.
In the Horseshoe section, he was a hero because people said, "Why did you do it for that punk?" And Haig said, "I didn't do it for Dugan. I did it for Dugan's mother."
Tearing out her old gray locks and the tears came tumbling down. My son, what have you done to be sent to Charlestown?